when you first get into Bitcoin, you have a very high time preference with it. And you think you have a low time preference. You think you've learned what it means to be a Bitcoiner. And then you see someone with an idea that you hate and you go crazy over it. You have to lean into that. You have to lean into the fact that so many people criticize Bitcoin as gambling. And it is the challenge for Bitcoin and Bitcoiners and Bitcoin companies and the speakers to shine through the narrative. And in one fell swoop, we can probably defeat that narrative once and for all.
Welcome to Live with Bitcoin, where we delve into the human side of Bitcoin by focusing on Bitcoiners' personal transformations and life stories. I'm your host, Vivian. Thanks for tuning in. If you like and want to support our mission on shining light on the human side of Bitcoin, remember to subscribe to this channel, leave a comment, and send a few sats from link in the description. Today, our guest is Brandon Green. Brandon is a seasoned professional in the Bitcoin space with over years of experience shaping and growing the world's largest Bitcoin conference. As a key figure in evolving the event, he's worked tirelessly behind the scene to craft meaningful experiences and foster a strong sense of community among Bitcoiners worldwide. I've had the chance to learn his story in Bitcoin and found it very inspiring. And today we have the opportunity to hear it alive with Bitcoin. Welcome, Brandon.
Hello. Good to be here. Very excited to chat with you.
Well, Brandon, let's delve back a little bit and fast backwards to the time that you weren't a Bitcoiner yet. What was your first impression of the Bitcoin world and how exactly did you get into Bitcoin?
You'd have to fast back to 2017 springtime, early spring. And I was at the University of Alabama and I had David Bailey and Tyler Evans, who were in the same program as me in Alabama, but a few years older. They came back to the university and did a sort of event where people from this program were all like kind of discussing what they were doing in their professional lives, right? And I'll never forget, there was this fireside between David Bailey on the one side, who was doing this startup media Bitcoin thing, and then this guy, Alan from the New York Times on the other side, you know, both graduates from Alabama program. And it was on the future of media and information. And you got to think, like, this is spring of 2017. Trump had just taken office. He had just beat Hillary Clinton. I was on a college campus. Like, this was, the world was ending. And here I was ready to, like, hear this guy, Alan from the New York Times, just smack down David about the future of media. And instead, what I heard was David just skillfully and tactfully completely wipe the floor with the New York Times guy, explaining how, you know, because of decentralization, because of Bitcoin, because of everything that's going on, because of the internet, everything that is old is dying and new models are going to take their place. And no one should trust in the New York Times for having a better command on what's going on because they didn't even get the election right. And, you know, and that's not the people's fault. That's the New York Times' fault. To spin it in any other way is just fake. And he was like, you know, I'm building the future of media. Bitcoin is building the future of money. You know, this is where everything's headed. And if you guys want to stay in like the old world and cling on to it, like feel free. And like, it was just like, I left that conversation. Just my jaw was on the floor. I was not expecting to kind of hear that just powerful vision laid out by someone. So I find him afterwards back behind stage and I'm just like, dude, you know, that was so cool. And I knew that he was, you know, his company was based in Nashville. And so I was just like, you know, I'm a senior. I've got a job lined up already. I'm going to work at Anheuser-Busch in their brewery trainee program. I was a chemical engineering background, but I have a free summer until I start. I live in Nashville. I'm from Nashville. Can I come learn from you for a summer? And he was like, yeah, I think we have some boxes that you can move in like our storage closet if you want to come intern. I was like, great. And that was how it all started. I had no clue what Bitcoin was. I didn't know what Bitcoin mining was. I didn't know anything. I was moving boxes in our storage closet at the old office for Bitcoin magazine. Yeah, the rest is history.
Like how when did you realize you had fully crossed over to being a Bitcoiner, if they were at this moment?
That's a really good question. I think probably by the end of my internship, You know, obviously, I started buying Bitcoin as soon as I started. You know, we don't pay the interns much at BTC Inc. Just so everyone knows, if you want to come intern, if you want to follow the story, the value you get is not in your intern paycheck. Let me tell you that. But I was putting as much as I could aside from that paycheck into Bitcoin. I was learning all about it. And through that summer, I mean, this was a crazy summer to be getting into Bitcoin. I went from, you know, moving boxes in the storage closet very quickly to writing articles on Bitcoin Magazine as directed by Aaron Van Wertem, who was our like technical editor at the time, and Christy Harkin, who was our managing editor. Shout out Christy. She and like what was going on at the time was the hash war. You know, this was like the SegWit fork. I was there writing through everything going on. And like one of the first articles I had to write was on covert ASIC boost in Bitmain, you know, antminers that were like, that was going to get like screwed over if SegWit was implemented, because it was going to like take this shortcut out of the hashing algorithm. But so I went very quickly from not knowing literally anything about Bitcoin to like kind of writing some of the like, this is everything that Bitcoiners are talking about right now articles very quickly. And so it was a lot of fun. It was a steep learning curve. And somewhere in that process, I became a Bitcoiner, and like I started to really care about what was going to happen with this SegWit, and you know, why we needed to not hard fork the network, and you know, why this Bitcoin Cash thing was not a healthy way for the community to derive consensus, and you know, started really caring, and you know, here we are.
Right. I guess if you're very much on the front line of reporting what's happening in the coin, you're kind of forced into the learning curve of, oh, I have to know what I'm talking about to do a half decent job, or at least not suck. So I bet the pressure was really high, but in result, it generated a really passionate Bitcoiner in the end. You've dealt with so many Bitcoiners over the years. What are some of the commonalities you find that Bitcoiners share? Or in other words, if we see people out there who are not yet into Bitcoin, but they have these trades, we can safely predict that they're going to get into Bitcoin eventually. Well, everyone will be, but sooner.
Yeah, everyone except Peter Schiff. So I think that it's a good question. And I would actually fundamentally undermine the premise of the question, which is that I believe everyone will be a Bitcoiner. And so there will be no commonality between the Bitcoiners that they all share, which is both a good thing and a bad thing, right? Because like I think some of the ideological underpinnings of Bitcoin will slowly dissolve or mute over time. And I think we're watching that in real time right now, right? You know, with some of this institutional adoption narratives, this is not the cypherpunk screw the system narrative anymore. We have the president of the United States, the massive Bitcoiner. So there is this element where we're going to have to get used to the fact that like no two Bitcoiners share the same set of values, and that kind of sucks. But on the flip side, what that brings is massive adoption and the end game of Bitcoin in some ways. If I were to kind of, let's say, cut off the adoption lens at, let's say, 20, I'm actually going to be a little contrarian and say like 2018, because I think that the 2020 and onward set of Bitcoiners actually have an entirely different understanding of what Bitcoin is, and in my opinion, limited. The characteristics of like 2017 and before Bitcoiners, number one, they're very disagreeable. Number two, they are generally freedom-minded and recognize freedom in other people, which is, I think, a key point. And then number three, I would say, is they're open to experimentation and willing to take risks on improving things rather than kind of accepting dogma. So those would be my three.
Do you remember what was the reason you tried to hold on to as much as Bitcoin as possible? Because even today, when I'm working with various people and I offer them to pay sats, and then they'll be like, oh, I don't want sats. So what was the reason back in 2020, 2017, in the internship, you were actively trying to hold on to as many Bitcoin as possible?
Yeah, that one's super simple. The Bitcoin price was going up. Mm-hmm. And you want as much Bitcoin as you can get in that world. And I think like the real forging happened in the bear market when you know, you had to decide whether you were going to hold on to this Bitcoin that was going down or whether you thought you could outsmart the market. I personally held on. All right, you know, this is something that I didn't have the time, I didn't have the patience to try and trade Bitcoin, but many of my friends did. And at the end of the day, their stacks were smaller than mine. Not that I had a big stack. Again, I was basically an intern at the time. But my friends who were also interns, I watched their stacks dwindle in Bitcoin terms while they were trying to outsmart this move. Whereas I just kind of stayed on and was dumb and just, you know, held through and it worked out for the better.
Since 2017, now is what? It's almost 8 years? And in Bitcoin terms, that's a very long time. How has your own relationship to Bitcoin evolved since then?
Well, that's a great question. And I will point this out in terms of the 2020 cohort as well, like 2021 cohort, is that when you first get into Bitcoin, you have a very high time preference with it. And you think you have a low time preference. You think you've learned what it means to be a Bitcoiner. And then you see someone with an idea that you hate, and you go crazy over it. Like you're just like, you know, you think this person's attacking Bitcoin, they're gonna destroy everything that we've built, and my stack is gonna go down in value because this bad idea is being talked about, right? And so it makes you like really passionate, makes you super toxic. Like a lot of these behaviors ultimately come from the standpoint of, I have lashed myself to the mast of Bitcoin, and I need this thing to fucking float. Right. And you're pretty sure it will. And you've been told that it will, but you haven't seen it float for you yet. And so with time, that sort of high time preference anxiety changes to like a much more passive, peaceful coexistence with Bitcoin, where you don't just hope that, you know, the incentives stick and that the system works. You have faith that it does. And that is a very relaxing and easy thing to be able to ride the volatility of the Bitcoin price, the narratives, the attacks, all of it. So yeah, I would say like I have a much more relaxed relationship with Bitcoin than I did when I first came in. And I'm seeing that trend start to happen with the 2020, 2021 cohort that was like famously very toxic, very dogmatic, very, you know, active on, you know, the social medias and at, you know, the cyber hornets, right? The cyber hornets are evolving. They're metamorphosizing into, you know, more of a like Bitcoin butterfly, where, you know, you're just peacefully enjoying the landscape of Bitcoin. And you understand that this is all going to work, and that, you know, bad ideas will come and go, attacks will come and go, and the honey badger doesn't care. And you don't need to like live your life in constant anger and upset and in attack mode at all times.
For sure. Would you say that's a journey every Bitcoiners would naturally go through over time, or some people would kind of get stuck in a phase and then just be there?
I think so. I think it is a natural path for Bitcoin. Like I took that path when I first got into Bitcoin. And at the time I was seeing the Bill Gateses and the Mark Cubans and some of these like guys who were tech entrepreneurs come out and say like, oh, Bitcoin is a fad. It's never going to work. Which Mark Cuban was a very loud voice of that when I first got in. He's like, blockchain is real, but Bitcoin is fake. And I would get mad. Like I would be all on Twitter, like attacking this person and be like, you don't know what the heck you're talking about. Bitcoin is like superior to everything you'll ever do in your life, and you're irrelevant, and Bitcoin will outlive your legacy. You know, like I was mad. And now it's just like, I have the patience for them. I mean, obviously Cubans change his tune on Bitcoin, but the Peter Schiffs of the world, like I enjoy talking to Peter Schiff about Bitcoin. Like I enjoy hearing him think that Bitcoin is never going to succeed and it's a fad and it's a bubble, and he wants to explain to us why. And I enjoy the debate with him. And then, you know, I'm at peace that I own it and he doesn't. And, you know, what happens, happens. But yeah, you know, I think everyone takes that journey because everyone gets to a point where they understand that Bitcoin's success is not reliant on their defense of it. Bitcoin's success is reliant on the inherent sort of security model and incentives that the system produces.
That's interesting, because that feels like it's not only a lesson how you view Bitcoin, it's also a lesson we can adapt to ourselves to maintain personal peace. Because if everyone has this peaceful mindset and have faith in our own abilities, then we won't get so frustrated when somebody else says, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that, or you will never succeed in this, because then we just naturally have faith and you can talk however you want. I'm just going to focus on my proof of work and my peace. So I think that's a great lesson to learn, or stoic mindset to have, not only for Bitcoin, but really in many aspects in life. And you've worked in Bitcoin for pretty your entire career, basically. From what I know, you've held so many roles in the past. From your perspective, I know that your entire career kind of spanned in Bitcoin, but what is your observation of what is like working on a team in Bitcoin versus the traditional work environment? Working with all these unagreeable people in Bitcoin, what's the experience like?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would say, first of all, working in Bitcoin is a lot of fun. And, you know, you wake up every day excited to like hit the ground running, because you know what you're working for matters. Like, you're working on something that truly does matter, which is Bitcoin, and trying to, you know, as our company says, accelerate hyper-Bitcoinization. We know that hyper-Bitcoinization is inevitable, but we can do things to make it happen faster. And that's our goal. So yeah, it's a lot of fun. The people are good people in Bitcoin, like especially working at a Bitcoin only company. You know, it selects for a type of person that is here for the long run, not just here to make a quick bag. And so that means that you get great people here who care about the mission. And then, yeah, you know, you get to be disagreeable too. And you get to spar with people. And these are smart people. These are hardworking, passionate, and smart people who will go toe to toe with you on important matters. And iron sharpens iron. And so you want to see that from your team. You want to see that from the people you work with. You want to see that from the people you manage. Because at the end of the day, like, you know, Bitcoin has no masters, and everyone's on an equal playing field on Bitcoin. And if you bring that mentality and that spirit into a company, it means that the best people rise to the top. And that's a very healthy thing to have happen at any organization.
For sure. And along that line, what advice would you give to someone who wants to build a career in Bitcoin, but doesn't know where to start? Or in other questions, what do you think are some of the most important qualities someone should have if they were to succeed in working in Bitcoin?
I would say, first and foremost, you have to be a self-starter. We are not a corporate. Let me take that back. There are a couple of corporate kind of companies in the space now. I would say Coinbase, Kraken, Gemini, maybe a couple of like the mining companies have that corporate feel to them now. But generally speaking, if you want to work in Bitcoin, you're not going to encounter a true like corporate culture where you're going to be given a career ladder and a 5 or 10 year plan, or a, you know, like this is startup world. And so you're going to have to lean into that. And if you are successful in leaning into that, if you are a self-starter, if you can, you know, take on more, if you're passionate, if you're going to outwork everyone around you, you will, like I said, rise to the top. And so it's a very galvanizing kind of situation, I would say. But that also means that you're probably not going to break into the space by simply loading your resume to, you know, open job applications and hoping you get like an interview, and then hoping you just impress through the interview. It's like you gotta outlearn everyone. You've gotta out network everyone. You gotta show up to the in-person events and, you know, build your personal brand. You gotta launch a podcast, you know, sometimes. You gotta do all sorts of stuff to like really build your corpus of work, your proof of work, like you said, and demonstrate that you are not just here to collect a paycheck, like you're here for the mission. And so, you know, the last thing I'll say on it too is like, I've gotten many, many hires that I've made at the company from Twitter DMs. And so like, you have to put yourself out there. And, you know, these are not all people that have massive followings on Twitter, but they took the step to just like reach out and YOLO it and try it. And it worked. So yeah, that'd be my advice.
For sure. I definitely feel the same. And there's a saying where you get promoted to the job you're already doing. I get that vibe in Bitcoin a little bit. And there's, I agree, like you have to be a little shameless even to put yourself out there, because oftentimes we have a lot of fear, and we have fear for rejection. What if I DM this person and never hear back, and then I will look back? Then don't think too much. For me, it's about planting seeds. You plant seeds all the time. And of course, they're not going to sprout, but you just keep planting seeds. Some will sprout, and then you just tend to the ones that do sprout. But the action of planting seeds should never. And that's how you can keep your garden growing for the better over time. Sometimes I have random interactions and I tell them I work in Bitcoin, and I get a weird look. Like, I never fully grasp what were they thinking when they were having that thought themselves. So what do you think is the most misunderstood part of working in Bitcoin? for people?
Yeah, I would say, well, there's like a, what are the misperceptions of working in Bitcoin? And then there's like, what is misunderstood? I would put those as kind of two different things. I think, first of all, misperceptions all the time when I tell people I work at BTC Inc., they're like, oh, you work for Bitcoin. And then you have to be like, Bitcoin is like digital gold. There is no company that is Bitcoin. You know, you are working in the same way you could work at a gold company. You can work at a Bitcoin company, but you can't work for gold. You can't work for Bitcoin, right? So it's almost rehearsed at this point. But the I think the misperceptions of other people who aren't in the Bitcoin space hearing that you work for a Bitcoin company are just that you must like be like rolling in it. You guys must just like print money and you know, like all that kind of stuff. The reality is it is tough to run a Bitcoin company. And this is like the misunderstanding probably of working in Bitcoin is you have to stomach the volatility of Bitcoin in order to stick around and make it. You know, this is now my third rodeo in Bitcoin where you have a massive run up followed by a brutal and debilitating bear market. Obviously, we're in the run-up right now. The brutal and debilitating bear market will come. And you have to be storing, you know, nuts for winter through the summer and making sure that you can survive the bear market. And the thing is like the companies that are around today that have been around, they're not around because they crushed it in the bull market. They're around because they survived the bear market. And so, you know, like the cockroaches went out in Bitcoin. So yeah, but that means if you're going to work in Bitcoin, then you have to make sure not that you can get a great high paying job in the bull market and make a bunch of money. It's that you can deliver value consistently to your organization in the bear market, because otherwise like cockroach mode will hit you. So yeah, that'd be my explanation of it.
Oh yeah. It's definitely a tough gig, both on the individual level and on the company level. I definitely have so much respect for the Bitcoin companies that do survive the bear market. It was brutal. The company volatility hits so differently for companies and individual. It requires a different level of dedication and conviction to not only for your professional career, but also in Bitcoin, because you really have to go all in.
Absolutely. Yeah. And having been on the other side of it, it is crushing as an organization to kind of go through this mode where you like you want to hire, you have these visions of how you want to grow, everything's coming together, you know, when it rains it pours, it's looking great, and then you know you flip to the other side of it and it's like you have great ideas, great executors, great team, and there's just not enough revenue to support the current headcount, and you have to make cuts, and you're cutting people who believe in Bitcoin, believe in the mission, are hardworking, great people that you all you want to do is just see them succeed. And you still have to make the cut, not because you want to, but because like you have a team that you have to support and you know, make it through the bear market with in order to even survive. And so, you know, it is the most brutal part of running a Bitcoin business. And you don't know anything about a Bitcoin business until they made it through a bear market. They could be the best, like you could think this company is the next, you know, Apple. And until they make it through a bear market, you have no clue. The bear market is where everything happens.
And I guess that experience kind of amplified with the whole event business, because there's you build a whole show leading to a date, and then people somehow show up. The stress is another level. So let's talk about the upcoming Bitcoin conference. Bitcoin 2025 is coming to Las Vegas. Why Vegas? What does this setting open up that maybe something that wasn't possible in Miami or Nashville or elsewhere?
Yeah, it's a great question. So Vegas for a couple of reasons. Number one, and you cannot discount this, is that Vegas is the like conference capital of the world. And so, you know, when you look at all the successful events that happen, so many of them come through Vegas or have a Vegas component, because it's just the place where people want to travel for a weekend or for a few days to have fun, do an event, enjoy themselves, et cetera, et cetera. There's this element where it's just like, you haven't really reached the pinnacle of like the event business until you pulled off a Vegas event, right? On top of that, there is a fun interplay that we get to do as a Bitcoin company between the gambling capital of the world and Bitcoin, right? And you have to lean into that. You have to lean into the fact that so many people criticize Bitcoin as gambling. We know that these headlines will write themselves. And it is the challenge for Bitcoin and Bitcoiners and Bitcoin companies and the speakers to shine through the narrative. And in one fell swoop, we can probably defeat that narrative once and for all. You know, this Bitcoin company rolled into Vegas. Everyone's expecting to hear about all of the bukus of money people are making, and oh, this is, you know, I put in $100 and I made $10,000, just like the roulette table, right? And they're, you know, they already have the stories written, right? And then when we hit them with what the Bitcoin conference is, when they hear Ross Ulbricht speak on stage about being freed and what it means to be free, when they see the Trump administration, various people from the cabinet talking about how Bitcoin is fitting into their geopolitical strategy and Bretton Woods 2.0, when they listen to CEOs of Fortune 500 companies and, you know, major financial institutions discussing how Bitcoin is the lifeblood of the future of the financial system, then they are going to get caught on their heels. And our Trojan horse narrative will unleash, and Bitcoin will come out on the other side as like the dominant narrative of like, I thought this was gambling. This is the future of money. So that's what I'm hoping will come out of the Bitcoin conference. And then, you know, at the same time, everyone's going to go, it's Vegas. They're going to have a great time. You know, they get to go party with their cohorts and their friends and their colleagues and enjoy Vegas while also going to the best Bitcoin conference in the world.
What are some of the new themes, formats, or experience you're introducing this year that you're especially particularly excited about?
Yeah, so there's plenty that I can't share because, you know, we like to hold our surprises. You know, the theme we're going with right now is embrace the game theory. We had President Trump speak last year in Nashville. That was a major domino falling in terms of getting a truly pro-Bitcoin US president. And it also showed the power of leaning into the Bitcoin movement from a political lens. We are now a political force in the US, but around the world. And so, you know, there is this game theory that's starting to play out of who's going to be the pro-Bitcoin candidate in France and the UK and Italy and Tokyo and South Korea, you know, like all of these places, hopefully someday like Hong Kong and China, you know, and getting that pro Bitcoin person by the fact that they believe in the tenets of Bitcoin, they qualify themselves to a group of people that can actually sweep them into power. And then they can go kind of enact the vision of Bitcoin in the governance of their whatever sort of constituency they have, whatever, you know, whether it's a president, whether it's a mayor, whether it's, you know, a governor, et cetera, like they can start to enact the ideals of Bitcoin. So I think that's a major trend that, you know, we had the privilege of being able to kick off last year and that we're going to want to fan those flames. And there's a lot that we have planned there. And, you know, the kind of part two of that is we have this Code and Country Day that we're doing on the 27th, where because of the fact that we helped, you know, the Bitcoin movement helped Trump win this election, the question now becomes, what does it look like to be a pro-Bitcoin country? And you know, the administration is open ears, right? Everything that we asked for and the community asked for and Trump made promises on the campaign trail for, like, it's all happened. You know, he said he'd fire Gary Gensler, he'd free Ross, he'd make a strategic Bitcoin reserve. You know, he would never sell the Bitcoins. Okay, like, done. Check, 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 check. All right, now what do we want, right? Like, now how do we build America as an, you know, red, blue, and orange? Right. And so the question is, like, what sort of conversations can we facilitate with the administration to continue to push forward Bitcoin adoption with the US? And that's, you know, I don't have the answers to that. You'll hear about the answers on stage. You know, like, I'm excited to hear about it, too. So lots to come.
For sure. And you were part of the very first Bitcoin conference. It's been year after years of reinvention and evolvement over the years. What are some of the biggest differences that you've caught energy-wise, scale-wise, goal-wise since the first ever Bitcoin conference?
Yeah, it's a good question. And, you know, the first ever Bitcoin conference, it's funny too to think about the team. So it was me, Tommy, Pat, JC, Justin, and then, you know, David. I don't think I'm leaving anyone off. Maybe I am, but I don't think I am. And so it was like, you know, Harrison Ballard, who's not on the team anymore, but he was our head of programming at the time. And everyone just kind of like, was like, okay, well, you know, you do this, I'll do this. Like, you know, we'll figure out whether we're missing anything, you know, and hopefully everyone shows up to this conference at the end of the day. It was not a big team. And the narrative at the time and the thing that we wanted to push was we were going to be a Bitcoin-only conference, leave your shitcoins at the door. We're here to talk about Bitcoin and Bitcoin only, right? And at the same time, we want to heal the community after this vicious fork war, the vicious civil war of Bitcoin. And can we kind of bring some of the people on opposite sides together to come recognize that Bitcoin has won, BTC, Bitcoin has won, and it's time to move forward focusing on Bitcoin, right? So that was the narrative of 2019. 2020, we were going to be celebrating the halving. We were almost perfectly aligned with when the halving was going to happen. And then COVID hit. So then that one got canceled. We rolled that into 2021, which was the narrative of like, we're the first in-person event in the world, which was pretty cool. So, you know, if you are sick of sheltering in place and you want to come hang out with human beings in person again, the Bitcoin place is where you got to go. So that was a massive party, and it ended with El Salvador announcing legal tender for Bitcoin, which was crazy, and we were not expecting that. That came in through, you know, Jack Mallers the week before the event. 2022 was all about, okay, now we've gone through this bull market. The you know, ecosystem has grown tremendously, and we've broken into the mainstream. This is like, 2022 is like, we are mainstream, right? Through a festival, it was crazy. 2023, we were like, okay, this is the bear market. The narrative is who's still left after this brutal, brutal downturn, the collapse and the contagion in our industry. How do we build moving forward in a sustainable and like respectable way? What are the lessons we need to enshrine as a community? 2024 was, hey, this is a halving year and an election year, and this is a big election. Let's see if we can get the major candidates from both parties to come speak, which then morphed into like, actually, Trump is going all in on this. Like, holy cow, let's see what we can build here. And then now it's a 2025 where it's like, okay, we elected the president. Presidents all around the world and candidates all around the world are thinking about becoming pro-Bitcoin. Let's define what that means. And let's spread our movement around the world. And then let's also make America orange. And so, you know, like these are sort of the narratives we set out, right? And it's funny, you can kind of like put the target on the wall and try and hit it. And because we have such a stellar team, we tend to hit it. And it's kind of cool. Like, it's not as easy as you would think to be able to hit these targets, but we managed to kind of pull it all together in the end. And it's very special.
Yeah, definitely. Kudos. Lots of kudos to the team, because people may think it's, you know, think it's a company that organized Bitcoin conference that happens year after year. But no, like the organization, the scale of operation, and then the problems, they don't really get easier because you keep leveling up. It's like you play a game and then it just goes up in the difficulty level and you still have to crush all of your goals. I certainly have way more appreciation and respect after working in an event company like yours to really have a lot more respect and appreciation to the organization and the heart and the sweat and the blood that goes into shaping all these great experiences and the collective experience for Bitcoiners to connect with each other in real life. Because there are so many Bitcoiners, they're still so lonely. They're the only Bitcoiner in their family, perhaps. They live in a place where they may not have seen one Bitcoiner in real life beside themselves. And that could be incredibly lonely. And opportunities like this Bitcoin conferences, when Bitcoiners come together, the magic start to happen. And definitely hope there are more Bitcoiners who get to experience that through our events and in the different places and have a opportunity to unlock their magical journey beyond the financial aspect of in their lives and trigger major movements to inspire and to remind how we're all in this together. But Live with Bitcoin is definitely better. After all these years, there are so many organizations and hard work that goes inside of this. Are there any most meaningful or wild moments you've had behind the scenes that you could share with us?
My God, like too many to count, to be honest. I would say, you know, to pick out a couple of highlights on the more meaningful side, I think I'll pick one from every year. 2019, we had Ed Snowden. It was one of the first times he spoke publicly. And what did he do? He announced on our stage that in 2013, 2014, when he leaked the fact that the NSA was spying on US citizens, he required servers to store all the information that he had gathered, all the evidence, and he bought those servers with Bitcoin. He couldn't use a credit card, you know, it would tie it directly to his name. Like, he had to purchase it in some way that was not directly tied to his identity. He used Bitcoin. So Bitcoin was a tool that helped expose one of the greatest, you know, betrayals of a country of all time. So, you know, right off the bat, like, we were like, holy cow, you know, there's something powerful here to really tap into. 2021, I would say the most powerful moment, there were many. I mean, I was a mess backstage. Like, I was sobbing half the event. But one of the things that really hit me was the Russell Bricht speech, where, yeah, not many people know this, but when we played, like, we basically had to work out a little workaround with the prison. This is a long story, but I'll cut it really, really short. And he's not allowed to actually give a speech at a conference. He's in prison, but he can give media interviews. And so we were a media outlet, Bitcoin Magazine, willing to do an interview with him, in which we basically sat on the other line of the phone and just listened. And so we listened to him and let him tell his story. And then we clipped that and we put it out on stage as a speech. When the prison found out about it that night, they threw Ross in solitary confinement. And, you know, his mom came to me the next morning and was like, Ross is in solitary, he's in the SHU over the speech. I kept telling him he shouldn't have done this. Like, I am just beside myself. And here I am talking to his mom as the person on the other end that, you know, facilitated the thing that got him thrown into solitary confinement. And I had to console her. I had to hug her. She was stronger than I was in that moment, right? And so then I decided that we had to replay that on stage because there weren't enough people the day before. And I wanted to show the defiance that Bitcoiners have to injustice. And, you know, obviously I got her permission to do it. After he got thrown in the SHU, we replayed it. And there was not a dry eye in the entire room. It was a beautiful moment. So that was the big one. 2022, I would say it was the people that I got to meet through the whole experience. Aaron Rodgers, Serena Williams, Peter Thiel, Jordan Peterson, Eric Weinstein, Dave Portnoy, a lot of like crazy mainstream characters that were just leaning into the Bitcoin conversation for the first time. Crazy. And you know, just getting to kind of be like a Bitcoiner face for them to interface with and you know, learn more about. It was awesome. 2023, the power of seeing RFK and Vivek Ramaswamy, but you know, both of them basically made their presidential campaign debuts on our stage. Both of them wanted to start at a Bitcoin conference their presidential campaigns, right? But to hear RFK, a Kennedy, go out on stage and talk about how the trucker protest, the Canadian trucker protest, made him realize how important it is to have unconfiscatable money that cannot be frozen by a tyrant. Like, to hear that connect with a mainstream political candidate in the U.S., like, it was goosebumps. I still get goosebumps thinking about it. And then in 2024, probably when the craziest moment there was, not many people know this, Trump was supposed to go out at, like, I don't remember the time, 2:30, 3:30, something like that. And he hadn't shown up backstage yet. I was on stage announcing Bitcoin 2025 in Vegas. And the thing that was supposed to interlude with that is then David coming out and announcing and welcoming Trump. So I'm out stage and like, from what I think, Trump's on his way, like, we're going. So then I announce Vegas and then I say, it is my like distinct pleasure to welcome the CEO of BTC Inc., David Bailey. And so then I like start walking off stage and David's not coming on stage. And like, come on, Dave, you know, like, get on stage. And he's like, no. And I was like, Dave, get out here. And so like, then he's all like frazzled and he just like starts walking out and he's pacing around on this mic, very nervous. I meanwhile am talking to the Secret Service backstage. And they're like, hey, just so you know, Trump's not coming. There is a person in the audience who snuck through the TSA security. We can't locate him. And we think he could be a threat against the president's life. So I'm like walking out, like, oh my God, the CEO of our company is out on stage. At some point, this person's going to figure out that we know that this is happening. And I got to get our CEO off the stage. So like, we're panicking backstage. And meanwhile, David's like out there fumbling through like a talk of, you know, introducing the president. He's like coming to the end of it. And they're like, Brandon, you got to go out there and just like buy some time. And I'm like, I'm going out there. And they're like, no, you got to go. And David says, and it's my distinct honor to introduce the president of the United States, Donald Trump. And then like, I walk out and I'm like, I'm not the president. No, we have technical difficulties. We'll be right back. See you soon. Shuffled myself off stage as quickly as possible. So long story short, it ends up that it was just a Lightning developer, Jordy Montes, who snuck through because he wanted to see Trump, and the, you know, we had hit capacity in the main stage. And so when no one was looking, he like slipped into the group of VIPs that were part of a fundraiser earlier on, and they all had already been vetted by the TSA, but he hadn't. And so like, they were just trying to find this guy. That's where the whole Jordy Montes, please find the nearest exit, you know, voice of God happened. And yeah, the rest is history. He eventually, we found him, the Secret Service interrogated him for a little while. And then, yeah, we rolled on with the show. So that was a pretty wild one.
Wild story. Like people, I guess sometimes people don't realize for all Bitcoiners, we're in it together and we're all doing it for the first time. It's not easy. The opportunities that the team created for Bitcoiners to see this in real life, a lot of respect and appreciation. And we're looking forward to joining Las Vegas to see what is in the store for this.
Can I say one more thing about like people who everyone needs to know their name? Is Addie McDougall, who was running production for Bitcoin 2024. Like again, there are so many funny stories about this event, but one of them that people know, but do they know that they know it, is that we confirmed Trump to speak at our conference on a Friday, 2 weeks before our event, a little less than 2 weeks before our event. On a Sunday, he got shot in Pennsylvania. He got almost assassinated, right? And so there was this like crazy Sunday where we're all in our Slack being like, what is happening? You know, like, did we just lose, you know, the president speaking at our event? What's going on? We're 24 hours of like sheer panic of our entire team. We found out Monday that like, maybe it was Sunday night even, that he was like, defiantly, I'm going to be there. No way am I going to miss this, which was like super cool and very impressive for him to be like, no, I'm definitely continuing to appear in public. I don't know if I would respond like that. But the crazy part was that in that span, his Secret Service detail like tripled or quadrupled. And that became our problem because we were we were the first event that he had that was not a campaign rally event where, you know, they controlled everything. Like the Secret Service didn't run our production. We ran our production. Then we had to coordinate with the Secret Service. They completely flipped our entire floor plan. And then on top of that, in the process, RFK finally got Secret Service detail for himself awarded. And so then we had to deal with not only Trump's Secret Service and reformatting all of our game plans around the production of the event, but then also RFK's Secret Service and reformatting all of our production around the event. And then you know, Kamala was like in the wings of like, oh my God, is she actually going to speak here too? Are we about to have to do this whole song and dance again? And so Addie McDougall, what a champion. She makes all of our events feel amazing, run smoothly. I mean, she's a superwoman, but she definitely took one on the chin working with the Secret Service for that 2024 event. Heroic effort.
Wow. The upcoming Vegas event, I'm sure, will be full of surprises and amazing moments are yet to come, and beautiful energy as well among the Bitcoiners. So really looking forward to attend and see how this, how big are Vegas.
Absolutely. Can't wait. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be crazy. The biggest event in our industry's history. So get ready.
Get ready. Thank you so much, Brandon, for joining us today. Thank you for sharing all of the behind the scenes stories and your personal journey into Bitcoin. I'm sure this journey has been more than wild for you personally. I've ever clueless university grad turned into the Bitcoin wizard that...
Clueless Bitcoin company exec, yeah. Still clueless, don't worry. No, it's been a wild ride. And let me tell you, we're just getting started.
This is another episode of Live with Bitcoin. I'm your host, Vivian. We'll see you in the next episode.